This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It is the day after the Massachusetts primary and the first one in this pandemic. Now, most of the results have come in, but we're still waiting to hear about the 4th Congressional District, where Brookline Selectwoman Jessie Mermel and Newton City Councilor Jake Auchincloss are neck and neck in their quest to succeed Congressman Joe Kennedy. Secretary of the Commonwealth Bill Galvin just recently announced in the last little bit that he's seeking a court to authorize local election officials to continue counting a number of ballots in that race, including mail-in votes. We will talk about that more later in the show, but let's focus right now on one of the night's biggest moments and the reason Kennedy's seat is open. Incumbent Senator Ed Markey successfully fought off a challenge from Congressman Joe Kennedy. Here's Markey speaking to reporters earlier today.
There's an old saying in Massachusetts politics that it's great to have young people behind you, but they just don't vote in Massachusetts. Well, we put that old saw to rest yesterday.
Here for more is WBUR's Anthony Brooks. Welcome, Anthony.
Hi, Tiziana.
So let's jump right to it. Why did Markey win?
Well, I mean, I think he touched on a point there talking about those young people. They voted in big numbers yesterday, and it really helped fuel Markey's victory over Kennedy by more than 10 points. I think Markey also did a really good job of sort of casting himself as a progressive in this moment when progressivism, especially in Massachusetts, especially in a Massachusetts Democratic primary, really carries a lot of weight. And his alliance with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez really cast him as that progressive. On the other side, you know, it was up to Joe Kennedy to really make a case why Markey should be fired. And I think for a lot of voters, he just didn't do that.
So let me ask you, a lot of incumbents won last night, Anthony. So what does that do to this idea that this is about youth insurgency?
Well, I mean, arguably in Markey's case, the youth and progressivism and all those progressive political groups from the Sunrise Movement to people who care about the agenda put forth by Ocasio-Cortez, I mean, it was fueled by progressive energy in a lot of ways. But if you're talking about Richie Neal out in the first congressional district where he was challenged by Alex Morse, you know, the progressives didn't carry the day out there. And yeah, one of the big storylines from last night is all the incumbents across Massachusetts, all the members of Congress and the Senate won their primaries. So, in that sense, incumbency won, progressivism upsetting the apple cart, not so much.
All right, WBUR's Anthony Brooks, I know you're going to stay with us for most of the show. So sit tight if you would for a minute, please, because for more reaction, I want to now turn to someone with personal experience, both running in a congressional primary and working with the mail. That's Congressman Bill Keating. He represents the Massachusetts 9th Congressional District. And early in his career, he worked as a mail carrier for the U.S. Postal Service. Congressman Keating, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Tiziana, it's great to be with you again. And thanks for all you're doing to enlighten people. We're going to need it during these critical times ahead.
Well, thank you for being here, and let's do it together, and let's start with the results from yesterday. You served in the House with Ed Markey before he became a senator. You endorsed him in the race. You also right now serve with Joe Kennedy. What's your reaction to yesterday's outcome?
Well, there'll be people analyzing this in political science classes, for years to come, I think. But in the last analysis, you had two candidates, both of whom were very close to each other on issues. And so you look to the other issues of how their candidates, how they frame their races rather than the substance. And I think that there is something to be said about the fact that if you're going to challenge an incumbent, you have to set a case at the outset, not just why you could win, but also why you're better than them. And that didn't happen early on. It happened as the campaign developed. And that may well have been a factor, but I think people will be analyzing who voted. Now, there were an awful lot of new first-time voters, according to the Secretary of State, and that's going to be an interesting, change in what we had before, because younger voters did lag, and if they indeed were the first-time voters, it's going to be something that's very good for our democracy, to have people with so much at stake. And I think younger people understand that now. I had Greta Thornburg to my committee, and the response we got from college students, high school students, younger people, was enormous when she was a witness in front of my committee. And, you know, there's an example of her galvanizing one of the three existential issues we have in front of us right now, climate change.
So just to clarify for listeners, that's Greta Thunberg, that global environmental activist who has been global since her teenage years as a young adult.
That's right. We have trouble with her name sometimes because she pronounces it Greta Thornberry.
I can't do it. I'm doing my best, though.
She's extraordinary as a person. I really was very impressed with her and the young people that went and joined her in that hearing, including a conservative Republican student as well. So it showed a coming together and a generational understanding of just how serious the climate change issue is. And I think that was part of this campaign as well.
I want to stay on young people for a minute, because in this first Massachusetts primary in this pandemic, many first-time voters, which you would assume many young voters are, got to vote by mail. And in fact, Secretary Galvin, as of September 1st, said that we had received 850,000 mail-in ballots in this primary. I know that this is something you've thought a lot about. Your service as a postal carrier makes it sit home with you. Are you confident that the USPS has handled what it could in the last 24 hours and will be able to handle a mail-in election in November?
Well, I think it's two different questions. I think largely they were able to handle this primary in Massachusetts currently. However, with the increase in voting this fall in November and what's happening to the Postal Service right now in terms of cutting back on overtime, in terms of taking mail sorters that can just sort mail at tremendous rates of speed, pulling back on some of the actual mail receptacles, these things will have an effect. And I don't think they were fully pronounced in terms of yesterday's primary, but I'm very concerned going into November because we're having hearings, we're not getting answers, and we're hearing different things. We're hearing from postal workers themselves about these issues, and then you had the testimony of Postmaster DeJoy with a whole different tune.
So, Congressman Keating, let's stay on Postmaster General DeJoy for a minute. He has overseen many of the changes that you just described. He has suspended the changes that he was making to the USPS until after November, but many have criticized him for not rolling back changes that had already happened. Is him suspending what he's doing until after November far enough in your view?
No, it isn't. In fact, his qualifications, frankly, and his actions call his own ability to assume that position into question in my mind. The issue that we have in front of us, this is just not a democratic issue. This is a healthcare issue. People will vote. And do we want to really have people? I represent outside of Florida, I've been told, the oldest district demographically of any congressional district in the country. Now, people that are older, people with pre-existing conditions, they're endangering their health in particular to a disproportionate effect. Going out to exercise the democratic rights. This shouldn't just be viewed purely as a voting issue. It's a healthcare issue.
So I want to ask, what about legitimate concerns about fiscal health of the USPS? I mean, we know that there have been concerns for a long time. How do those get sorted out when these are the stakes?
The two things aren't, I think, during the testimony of Postmaster DeJoy, he tried to create a false narrative. He tried to say, well, the Postal Service needs change, so that's why I had to take these actions at this time. The two things aren't contradictory. We're in a healthcare pandemic right now, and there is a difference. Now, the longer-term issues of the post office, including a change in the pension, the way pensions are calculated, going 75 years forward, which is unusual for any business, did create a crisis. And there's issues of modernization. There's issues of trying to expand, I think, the services that are offered by the post office. And realizing, too, at the end of the day, it's a service. Now, there's portions of it that are money-making. There's portions of it that aren't. If this was privatized, as people like the administration try to use as an example, they would not serve those areas where it wasn't profit-making. And it's a service that brings our country together. So if you're in a rural area, if you're in an area where it wouldn't make economic sense to have deliveries, well, you wouldn't get service under the direction that they want to take us. That is not what the Postal Service was created to do.
I'd like to talk about the safety of voting via mail for a minute. We've got a yin and yang here. There was a report in the New York Post over the weekend citing an anonymous source claiming to have participated in mail-in voter fraud. On the other hand, the FBI came out last week and said there's no evidence of any coordinated fraud schemes related to voting by mail this year. What does this there is or there isn't tension about voter fraud and conversation about the legitimacy of mail-in votes do for our elections, and how can Congress keep the voting by mail safe?
Anonymous anecdotal information, probably spun by the same people that wore such dark clothes into the plane that President Trump talked about yesterday, they're fiction.
You're referring to his conspiracy about people on a plane
and
who were looters and rioters?
There's a conspiracy theory, too, exactly. And there's a conspiracy theory about mail fraud. We have entire states that had voted by mail for years and years. They've been analyzed. In fact, the president started with a commission to look into voter fraud, and they disbanded it because they couldn't find any. So, again, just like with the healthcare issue that we're dealing with, the COVID-19 issue, there's facts and there's fiction. And this administration is dealing in fiction and not facts. And just as it's important to deal with healthcare facts to guide us in terms of what action should we take, we should take in terms of policy, the same holds true for our elections. So the facts tell us that this is not an issue. It's done to create distrust in the elections. And frankly, on another front where our elections are being jeopardized and more information is coming from just breaking in the last day or two from the Homeland Secretary that his chief of staff withheld information about a Russian attack. Just as that's the case, attacking our elections, causing doubt. That's what Russia's attempt originally was to do, to cast doubt on our democracy. And to hear the President of the United States talk about the fact that this election's rigged before we have it, that mail fraud is going to be so rampant that any result will be rigged, plays right into Putin's hands and undercuts the thread that holds us together as a democracy.
Congressman, I know your time is limited, so in our last 30 seconds or so, with that still ringing in our ears, and knowing that this is an important, for all parties, important general election in November, what's your message right now to the voters of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
My message is this. There'll be opportunities to cast your vote in many ways. One of the ways that I think could be much better utilized and much safer, when you get your absentee ballot, when you get your mail-in ballot, you can fill that out, and all the town clerks and city clerks will have receptacles prior to the election. So you don't have to necessarily mail it in. You can be out and just drop it in. Check with your local town clerks. You'll be able to do this, and that'll ease the crunch of the mail and ensure your votes are there.
That's Congressman Bill Keating, who represents the Massachusetts 9th Congressional District. Thanks for joining us today, Congressman. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
So turning back to WBUR's Anthony Brooks, who's still with us and was listening into that conversation. Anthony, first, just what are your reactions?
Well, I mean, what you heard from the congressman is a case for defeating Donald Trump. And that's what a lot of Democrats are focused on in a big way. And, getting back to Senator Markey, that's certainly what he was talking about today in Boston as sort of where his focus is now. He's going to be going up against Republican attorney Kevin O'Connor on the November 3rd general election. And it's not unprecedented, Tiziana, as you know, that a Republican can win a Senate seat in Massachusetts. Scott Brown did it in 2010. But I think the feeling is, especially given the energy that Markey created among young people and progressives, he's got a pretty easy roll toward November 3rd.
And so, Anthony, what happens for Joe Kennedy now? And is there a loss for the Commonwealth in not having the two of them still in Washington?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, I heard that frustration expressed by voters along the way. And this sort of gets back to why Markey won and why Kennedy lost, because people often told me, you know, I like them both. I wish they could both be going to Washington. It's too bad I have to make a choice. But at the end of the day, and I think the congressman made the point, it's not enough just to say, this is why I'd be a good senator. You have to make a case about why you want to chuck the other guy out. And I think Kennedy didn't quite do that. I thought his case got stronger as his campaign went on, and by the time he was offering his concession speech last night, talking about working class folks who have the weight of economic insecurity on their shoulders, I thought that was quite an eloquent statement about why he was running. But you know, Markey clearly had the upper hand and thought and had sort of placed himself among the progressives and was fueled by that young energy. As for what happens next to Kennedy, it was interesting to listen to Markey today because, of course, this was a hard-fought and sometimes bitter campaign. But today in Boston, Markey paid tribute to the Kennedy family. Here's a little bit of what he said.
The Kennedy family has served the Commonwealth and our nation with distinction for generations. I revere their legacy and what they have done for our state and our country. I was inspired by a call to service by President Kennedy.
So, Tiziana, you know, get back to your question about what happens next for Joe Kennedy. You know, there's been already lots of writing about the end of the Kennedy dynasty, and it is true. He's the first Kennedy to lose in Massachusetts, but I don't think he's going away. He's still young. He's still talented. And I was thinking today of Andrew Cuomo. He lost a really disappointing, for him, a governor's race and then sort of disappeared. And a lot of people said, that's it. The Cuomo legacy is over in New York. But then he came back, ran for attorney general. Then he ran for governor and has been reelected twice. So I could imagine Joe Kennedy coming back, running for attorney general. If Maura Healey ends up running for governor one day, that opens up an opportunity for him. I don't think we've seen the last of Joe Kennedy III.